going. Emergency evacuation procedure. I don't think there's anybody here that doesn't know that. Apologies for absence. Will?
Yeah, we've got apologies from Councillor Keel, Councillor Cousins, and I understand Councillor Sanson's running a bit late.
Keel, Cousins, and Sanderson.
She's running a bit late, I think.
Sanderson's late, right. Minutes of the meeting held on the 4th of October. I'll move that as they stand before we discuss them. Is there anything? Have I got a seconder for that? Thank you, Will. One. I don't think I have anything to question on those. Anybody else? I propose the meeting. We've got them seconded. Can we have a vote on that, please? Will?
That's 4 votes for and 2 abstentions. That's carried.
Urgent business. I have one minor item of urgent business, and that's in relation to the annual appraisal of the chief executive. I've been asked to ask a quick. It says in the paperwork which I got today, it says consult with the members of your committee. So I will, if somebody nudges me when we get to there, that's the only place it sort of fits in the agenda as such. Declarations of interest. Anybody got any interest to declare? That was just a scratch of the forehead, was it, Will?
Yes. Yeah.
Fine. We now move on to audit. KPMG annual audit letter, page 19 to 18. Is that down for noting?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Can we note that? Those are in favour of noting it? Those against? Sorry? Oh, sorry, I thought I had. Yeah, quite. Maybe I should hit it with a lump hammer. I've been hitting other things today with a lump hammer. Well, yours is a more considerate comment, John. Thank you most kindly. Carried. Item 7 are new auditors. New to us, I think, would be the accurate description. And I have, they are Gareth Mills and Delina D'Souza. And I have promised not to mention cricket or Sri Lankan cricket in this introduction whatsoever. And on that basis, I won't. Would you like to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about how you see Rido?
Happy to do so, John. Delighted to be here in our first meeting this evening. So my
is Gareth Mills having an engagement lead with Grant Thornton. That means I've been accredited. Sorry.
Is that better? Right. So as an engagement lead, I've been accredited by the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales to sign off audit reports in the local government and NHS sector. So I will be the one signing the audit opinion next July, Chair. And Talina is the engagement manager, so he'll be the key point of contact for Anton's finance team here at Rydale. So if I just take the committee through our progress report, Chair, just going on to page 22 of the pack, we've just done a little brief background about Grant Thornton. So we are a global accountancy firm. We're the fifth largest firm in the UK. Over the page, in terms of the work we do, obviously, is like most major accountancy firms, we do deliver a range of services, but clearly for the purposes of Rydale, it is our external audit work in the public sector that will be our focus. And just on that, in terms of the work in the public sector, we are the leading external audit supplier to the public sector external audit market in both the local government and NHS sectors. We've summarised there on page 24 of the pack. That we deliver work to about 40% of the local government sector and over 30% of the NHS, including the York Teaching Hospital, which is one of our external audit clients. We've got a team of about 300 public sector specialists at Grant Thornton and over 30 accredited engagement leads, which is more than any other firm, and as I say, I'm one of those. And then we've just listed a number of bodies that we've picked up from KPMG in Yorkshire this year, and they're listed at the foot of page 24. Our audit approach is over the page on page 25, so everything will be building up towards signing that audit opinion at the end of July next year. And then in terms of progress, as at the middle of October, well, I had an introductory meeting with the previous Section 151 officer and the interim chief exec back in March, just to introduce myself and the firm. And then last Monday, John, we had a very productive day here at Rydale, myself and Talina, meeting with Anton, with the members of the finance team, with the new chief executive, and obviously with yourself as well, John. That was a really helpful day to get us up to speed with a lot of the issues here at Rydale, and will help inform our audit planning for 18-19. In addition to that, earlier this month, we visited KPMG's offices to review their audit work that they did in 17-18 to make sure that we can place appropriate reliance on that work. We're happy to say that visit went well, one or two minor queries which we've dealt with, and we're happy to say that, you know, we'll be placing reliance on their work from last year. Audit deliverables are listed there, so again, that's the sort of key timetable that we'll be working to as the year progresses. And then the rest of this paper, Chair, is just an update in terms of some of the publications for the sector, which are just provided for information and interest to members of the committee. So that was all I was proposing to say on this paper, John, but happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Gareth. Any questions from anybody? Sounds like a deafening silence. I think that may be the last time you have zero questions.
We might be saving it up for the fee letter, which is coming next.
Well, yes, I was going to suggest, do we need to note that report? Anybody any ideas? Yeah. I move that we note the report. Have I got a seconder, please? Thank you, Will. Twice.
That's unanimous.
Thank you. Now we go on to the more interesting part. And before anybody else says it, the only piece of good news I can see, it is less than the previous cost of the auditors. But the justification for it, I will leave down to you entirely.
that's mainly as a result of the sort of central procurement exercise that took place last year, where the SAA ran the procurement process for the, well, for all local government bodies, bar about a dozen nationally. So 480 opted into this particular scheme, and as a competitive tender, obviously that's reduced in resulted in a reduced audit fee across the local government market. The fee letter is something that auditors are mandated to issue. We have to issue it by the end of April the year under audit. So clearly this was submitted and agreed with Anton's predecessor, Peter Johnson, but Anton is clearly aware of this letter. Nothing really of major interest in it, other than the fee, which is the fee scale that's been set by PSEA, which is £32,000. The rest of the letter just sets out in broad terms the areas of our audit work, which obviously the two key bits are around the audit of your financial statements and the value for money conclusion, and in broad terms the timetable that we'll have to deliver that work. It confirms that the two key members of the audit team for Rydell will be myself and Selina. And that's it really, Chair. I wasn't really important to say much else about the feedback, but again, happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Gareth. Linda.
I just wondered what your hourly rate is based on, and how that fee is worked out, and how much time you expect to stand spend in this council.
Well, in essence, that's a set fee, really, that's been prescribed nationally. So,
prescribed by whom?
PSA.
Right.
They've done the national procurement exercise, and in effect, they have reduced audit fees by about 22-23% across the board. So they will have simply taken your fee for last year of 41,000 or whatever it was, and taken 20% off that, and said, right, that is the set scale fee for Rydell that Grant Thornton has to deliver the audit and bill £32,000. Clearly, from our perspective, we still need to deliver an audit that's compliant with the SIP code, and we'll be monitored ourselves on that. So, in terms of how that will play out, in terms of time on site, I would imagine there'll be a 2 to 3 week visit early in the new year for our interim visit. So, Selina will be on site quite a bit during that time. We'll have an audit in charge of some of our SIP trainees working on the audit, and then we'll do another visit, our core visit, which will be in sort of June, July. Again, that'll probably be 4 or 5, maybe 6 week visit. So there will, in terms of our on-site presence, I would imagine that will be in line with what KPMG have done in the past, but clearly, you know, we're delivering it within a reduced fee envelope.
Just another question.
Yeah, sure, and no problem at all. Is your microphone on?
Oh, yeah, sorry. You talked about competitive tendering. If there's a set fee, where does the competitive tendering come into it?
Well, what will have happened is that a number of accountancy firms submitted their tenders to PSAA to win this work, and certain firms that had worked in the market for a number of years have probably put in their tender at a higher price and are now no longer in that market. So, for example, your predecessor auditors, KPMG, weren't awarded any work under the most recent tender process. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of why that happened, but clearly, from our perspective, there were no issues in terms of the quality of their audit work, from what we were aware of. So clearly, one of the main reasons they probably dropped out of the market is they bid it to a higher price. So similarly, ourselves did quite well in that process. Another firm called Mazars did pretty well. Ernst & Young, or EY, actually came back into the local government market, having been out of it for a number of years. There's other firms like BDO that are also involved. But some of the big firms like PwC, KPMG, and Deloitte have only really got a small sector of our market now, have sort of dropped away in terms of local government market. So it was all, you know, it was clearly based on quality and price and you know, firms needed to get that balance appropriate for PSAA to be awarded the work in question. And the work was allocated out on lots of different size. So there were six lots nationally, and lot number one was to win 40% of the market. And Grant Thornton, you know, we were delighted that we were allocated lot one, so we won 40% of the market, and other firms obviously won slightly smaller proportions. But I mean, local authorities did have the option to opt out of that and run their own procurement process. But as I said, I think in terms of local government, police, fire, there's about, I think, about 490 bodies in England, and I think 480 of them decided to opt in to the PSAA run procurement, and only 10 went and did their own procurement process. So in the NHS bodies, CCGs, they run their own external audit procurement process, but in local government the view of the sector was that they wanted to continue to have a central procurement organisation running it like the Audit Commission did in the past, and the PSAA body are now doing it in the present.
I'd just like to add into that. It, in my opinion, it was a case of the market going wrong. Because worldwide you have a few million farmers, billion farmers, and they're all individuals. So they're negotiating power with the big handful of food and grain companies worldwide is nil. So they get in commodity prices what the market says, and that's four or five large companies agreeing what the market would be. And that was what was happening, without being too rude to you, I mean, I try not to be too rude, in relation to the audit world. There was a handful of people, organisations, doing this one, and individual councils, all individually, were bidding against. And when the individual councils got together and said, excuse me, we're now one of the big boys, let's negotiate, and that has brought the figure down, because I think it was unreasonably high before, not necessarily the last one, but before that it was silly, and then it's now coming down to a figure that may or may not be reasonable, and we'll know that the next lot of bidding round, because Grant Thornton will say, whoa, we can't do it for that figure, so we're not going to bid. Somebody else will say, we can do it for 20% up on that figure, so they'll go in at 20% up, etc. But it will make it a marketplace as opposed to a dictatorship as it was.
Yes.
That's what happens in the NHS and obviously in the commercial world.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, there's been a long tradition of audits in local government being allocated by a central body.
Yep.
So the PSAA process allowed that to continue, so that, you know, it was out of your hands, it was out of the MDs, and the transforms that were allocated to provide an audit.
Yep.
Fees is one. I think they consider quality, you know, the work, you know, all the, you know, suppliers have done over a period of time, and they go through a marking system. So there is a competition here. In addition to the fee, Grant Thornton quoted against other suppliers, they consider, you know, the work Grant Thornton has done in the past, timeliness of, you know, delivering the work and all that. So that's where sort of I think the competition comes in. So as an independent body, PSA would, you know, award this going through all these criteria.
Yeah. I see two hands. It's yours, Ed. Sorry, I thought it was Will again. Will was just waving his pen, is he?
No, I've got my hand up there.
Right. Ed.
I think this is just a quick one. It's probably in here somewhere, but I don't see how many years is this in. Is this just for 1 year initially, or is it for a period?
It's for a 5 year period with the possibility to extend for a further two. So
5 years with the possibility of a further two. Clearly, that would be what we'd be expecting if something significant occurred where there was a fundamental breakdown in relations, then PSEA would look at that and perhaps make a change if necessary. But should things run smoothly on both sides, it should be for 5 years, possibly seven.
Will?
Yeah, it's just a bit of a chicken and egg question, I think. The 20% reduction, PSSA, was that set as a before people were actually saying we want a tender for this, or did that come out after people tendered? It just happened that everybody was tendering at 20% less.
The latter.
Fine. That, thank you.
Any further questions, anybody? Well, I was two things. One, I'm a little nervous when the auditor touches wood. I'm not totally convinced about the analytical skills behind that, but I shall ignore that. And the second thing, I was going to move that we accept the audit letter, but I think that's committing ourselves far too far, so I think we probably ought to just note the thing, because the figure was agreed some considerable time back. So on that basis, I move that we note the audit letter.
That's carried, that's unanimous.
Thank you. And thank you to both of you. And if you would like to stay for the rest of the entertainment and excitement of the evening, we would be delighted for you to stay. But on the other hand, if you feel happy to go and would quite like to get back to the real world, absolutely fine as well. I wouldn't overdo it. But see how it goes. See how it goes, I think, is the right thing. When it gets to sort of 10 o'clock, you might start changing your minds. Right. Lovely stuff. Thank you both. Item 9, page 41 to 54, annual update of the internal audit charter. Stuart.
Thank you, Chair. Members who've been in the committee for more than 1 year will have seen a version of this document presented probably annually. I think the last time was September 2017. The Charter itself is quite self-explanatory in the sense it is quite a key document for the Council, because it kind of highlights the roles, responsibilities, rights of access, some of the way that audit works with officers, with members. And it's a key document that's required by the Public Sector Internal Audit Standards and the Accounts and Audit Regulations, which require internal audit to be done to certain standards. So in simple terms, what this does is try to update the document for the change of Peter moving on and Anton taking his place. So most of the track changes in red will be referring to a deletion of the Resources and Enabling Services lead, and just leaving the Section 151 reference, which is we're referring to Anton. There's been no professional standards changes in terms of needing to update for any other things. Now, the more eagle-eyed amongst you, the Chair being one of those, has already highlighted three unintentional errors which will need to be updated. On page 48, paragraph 7.3, just highlights and includes Peter's title when it should have been deleted right at the bottom of the page before the this is included in appendix 1. On page 50, on 11.1, I've inadvertently deleted the overview and scrutiny committee when it should have just been the resources and enabling services lead. And on page 8 and 9, there are references to, 8 and 9, there's references to the Audit, Governance and Standards Committee, which clearly you are not the Audit, Governance and Standards Committee, and it should have referred to Overview and Scrutiny Committee. So hopefully there's no more, but I'm quite happy to accept if there are any more and can make those changes. Or if there's any questions on the audit charter itself or the process of updating, I'd be happy to take any questions that members may have.
Any questions, anybody? And feel free to throw in any comments and things. And it doesn't have to just be tonight. If you're looking at this in your leisure in the next month or so, and you come across some interesting things that might or might not be right, don't hesitate to yell. Thank you, Stuart. Do we have to do anything with that? Do we have to accept those changes, or is it? Do you just make them? Let's approve the changes and be done with it. Because we, those in favour of, we could, if we're going to suspend standing orders and stop that vote we've just taken. I'm quite happy to do that, Ed. No, I mean, you are absolutely right. A little late for the amendment, but we'll cope with it. Can I move, as a mover of the motion, that we accept the charter, is that what it's called? Yes, the internal audit charter with the amendment as proposed by Stuart Cutts. That, I think, covers it. Thanks, Ed. And let's start again with the vote just to make it clear. A nanosecond later with that, and we'd have missed it. Thank you, Ed.
That's unanimous, carried.
No, it's more exciting that way, this way. Right, that's the internal audit, item 10. First internal audit and counter fraud progress reports, page 55 to 68. And is that you? That's you, Stuart, or is that Jonathan?
I'll go first, explain the internal audit side, Chair, and then pass over to Jonathan for the fraud report.
That will do fine. Last year, I think I tried my best to miss Jonathan out.
As you mentioned, Chair, this is the first progress report for the 18-19 year. The audit plan was approved by members in April, and if I can just highlight two or three things to members, or maybe one or two more than that, actually, in terms of the following report. On paragraph 6 on page 58, we highlight there's still one report that's yet to be finalised on payroll from 17-18. It's something that I think the mechanics of, from speaking with Anton prior to the meeting when we had a liaison chat about two or three weeks ago, it's the mechanics of aspects of the payroll and HR arrangements moving as a result of Denise retiring from Rydale through to County to establish the precise way forward on these IR 35 cases. So any report that's been such a long time in finalising needs to be finalised by management as soon as possible, and I highlighted it for members so that they're aware of any work from the previous year that's still to be finished. But from my point of view, it's not hugely significant because the council is almost there with finalising on IR 35 who specifically will pick up any new cases that may fall within that legislation. So they've highlighted paragraph 6. at this stage, because there's a separate report, Chair, I'll perhaps not refer to paragraphs 8 to 10, but members can obviously raise any questions. This is the bit about risk management and the work we've done with officers to help improve the arrangements, and subject to a report later on in the agenda. Probably the two things to mention. The firstly is paragraphs 11 and 12, where I suppose one of the questions we get asked more than most is who audits the auditors? And under the public sector audit requirements, once every 5 years, we get the joy of being audited ourselves by independent assessors. Chair, have you been contacted at all yet by Richard Smith? Because part of the assessment process will involve feedback from members as well as senior officers, as well as myself and others, part of Verito being interviewed, and also we've submitted some detailed information to help support what we feel our arrangements are compliant in the area. I know we were trying to make contact, but without an email address, I think we're going to give you a call once, or I was going to maybe grab a chat after this meeting, if that's okay, to try and get some time in your diary to meet the external assessors.
More than happy to.
Sorry, Chair, I should have mentioned this earlier.
It's absolutely fine. I've got at least two email addresses, yeah. And I'm more than happy to meet the people who audit the auditors. It's not a problem at all. But I'm not sure that we should be discussing it after the meeting, unless you want to stay at well on into the night, because I will make the same offer and you will have the same choice.
Yeah, it's just to let you know which days would be available, yeah, no, and what times might be more appropriate.
Give me a phone call or whatever, and we can fix up with a diary there and then.
Thank you.
Not a problem.
Probably moving back to the progress report, page 61. What we've done with officers is agree when to start certain pieces of work, and in the final column where we haven't started work, we've given an indication in this report when we're likely to start, either in quarter three or quarter four. The main emphasis of work has been on some planning works, doing some work on budgeting, which while it says in progress, we've had detailed conversations with Anton since around about May and June. We updated our knowledge from speaking with Anton earlier this month, where he fed back from scrutiny, I think, which was been the day before, where I'm aware that members have been well-versed and involved in understanding some of the challenges of reporting and the management of the budget side of things. So whilst the work stays in progress, it's something that is, instead of perhaps with some audits becoming the report as your final piece of work, it's been much more of an ongoing conversation and dialogue where we've been highlighting things to not just Anton, to John Rain, who presented, I think, the report to the previous committee, who's also been involved in aspects of the budgeting side of things. So we've done work on risk management, on budgeting, on development management, and started some pieces of work on one or two other areas which we're hoping to finish within the next few weeks. I think from my point of view on the audit side, that's all I'd want to highlight to members. Obviously, I suppose after Jonathan's been able to outline the fraud side, which starts on page 62 onwards, which I'll just highlight, page 63, inadvertently, it does say internal audit progress report. What it should say is counter fraud progress report, if that confused members by having two reports with the same title. So if I can pass over to Jonathan, who, as part of the head of our fraud team, is responsible for delivering the work of the fraud side as part of the progress report from page 63 onwards.
Thank you, Stuart. Good evening, councillors. I'm here to update you on the work of my team, the counter-fraud team, and I'd like to reference a table which is on page 65 of your packs. I'm pleased to report that we're on target, towards our targets. We're on track to meet our targets. 44% of our investigations have resulted in a positive outcome, and we've achieved savings of just under £12,000 against a target of £20,000. On the next page, I'd like to highlight some work we're undertaking with data matching. This month has been a very busy month because we've gathered a lot of data from the Council to send to the Cabinet Office as part of their National Fraud Initiative. And I can say that we've successfully gathered it, cleansed it, and uploaded it to the National Fraud Initiative. We also participated in a a pilot project that I was very pleased that we were chosen to be part of. And this involved a number of regional councils in our area. So we're talking about Leeds, Selby, Hambleton, Rydale, Harrogate, Leeds, and a few others from South Yorkshire. And this focused on looking for fraud within small business rate relief. We've received those matches back. We've received 4,000 matches of potential fraud. Now, I'll say that a very small amount of those 4,000 matches will be actual fraud. There will be quite a large amount of error, and there will be a very large amount of mismatching. And the role of my team is currently looking at these 4,000 matches in order to find those elements of fraud. If we do find any, the values can be quite high, which is one of the reasons we wanted to be part of this project. Our three key areas are mentioned next, and that's council tax support. So we've currently got 9 cases under investigation. I can tell you that 1 case has been approved for prosecution, and I hope at our next progress report to brief you on the nature of that case and the outcome of any prosecution. And I think that's all I'd like to highlight, but Stuart and I are happy to answer any questions in terms of internal audit or counter-fraud work. Thank you.
Thank you both. That's seamless. One starts off and the other finishes. It beautifully works together. It's almost as if you'd had this report as one report in the murky past. Any any questions? No.
Thank you. Do we do any work which tries to identify, say, council tax fraud, for instance, at an early stage, to try and prevent it, because it can soon roll up to a really, really big amount of money? So what type of work do we do, if any, to try and catch it at an early stage, say at the application stage?
As applications are received for single-person discount, it can be quite difficult to determine whether it's true or not. Mm. However, if council records show that someone's there, then they may well ask the question at the time to prevent it. In addition to that, every 2 years, a data matching exercise is conducted by the council tax team, and that runs credit check reports on a large number of residents. And that will highlight potential error, I would say, not really fraud. And people will be written to, and they will be asked, is there someone else living in your property? And if not, then that tends to be accepted. Where my team will get involved in is if something is missed by that exercise, or, as is quite common, a determined fraudster will simply brush off the letter that they receive and say, no, you've got the situation wrong. And they will continue to lie to the council. So we don't get involved in the mass number of potential single-person discount exercise problems, but we will get into the small minority where we're dealing with a determined fraudster.
Yes, please, sure.
Sorry, you mentioned someone called John Rain. Is that the same John Rain who's done work for this committee? No, it's a different John Rain. Thank you.
Yeah, you said that there'd been 4,000 potential people or businesses identified. What sort of process have we gone through to get 4,000 in order to begin the elimination process?
The 4,000 matches are based on a number of different match types. So, for example, if a business is claiming small business rate relief here in Rydale District Council, but they're also claiming it in Selby District Council, that will match up. And there'll be a relatively small number of those type of matches, but there's other ones that elicit much larger numbers. So, for example, We issue charitable rate relief to a number of organisations. One of the matches will look at the Charity Commission's register and will say, well, we're giving charitable rate relief to somebody who's not a charity. That doesn't mean it's potentially wrong, but it is a potential area of interest. The largest area that makes up the largest amount of matches involves a mapping of the OS map detail to people registered for business rates. And it may well pick up a lot of bad matches. So, for example, a business's name is changed, or a business's name is slightly different on our records versus another versus the OS records. So we will sample the largest match areas, and we will do the most in the sort of the highest risk areas. So we can't say, we wouldn't have the time in our budget to look at 4,000 matches entirely, but we will focus our attention on the highest areas, and we will sample each match type.
Thank you. And the other query I had was, at what stage do you involve the businesses themselves? I presume a lot of that work is desk work in the background, and they wouldn't even know that anything was going on.
The last thing we want to do is alarm businesses who are correctly claiming relief. A lot of it is desk work, and we will communicate with the business rates department at the council. And we will, if we think there's an error involved, we will alert them and ask them to write to the business and suggest that there's a problem. If we look at it and we feel that the council has been misled deliberately by a business, then we will gather evidence and we will contact them and ask them, why did you potentially mislead us in this way? And when we do believe a crime has been committed, then there's a certain process that we need to go through to protect ourselves, the council, and to be fair to the business itself.
Any more for any more? Go on, Ed. Yes, sir. No, I'll spoil yourself.
The only other thing I was saying, the amounts of money that we've saved on counter fraud activity seem to be relatively small. How does the amount of money saved compare with the amount of money we spend on obtaining those savings?
The council purchases 105 days per annum from us for counter fraud work, which equates to about half an FTE or half a full-time employee. The cost is in the region of £30,000. We've consistently produced more than that, though with the precepts around council tax, the situation does vary. It depends on the amount of council tax support fraud we uncover, which is a direct fraud against the authority, and the amount of council tax, which a large proportion will go off to the county council. But what I will mention is proposed changes in rate retention, which is one of the reasons why we're highlighting business rate fraud as an issue, and we're trying to get ahead of it before council funding is dependent on rises in business rates. Just to add, I think we do a pretty good job for you economically. I'd like to think so anyway.
Any more for any more? Thank you, Jonathan, particularly on that bit, and that really does. I wondered originally when you said onto businesses, and I thought, well, where's it going here then? But yes, as we're going into the collecting business rates for our own use, it is vital that we get ahead of the game, because you can't find out where fraud is by just starting. It'll take some time before. And then you'll have ones in your list of potentials that you won't have ruled out. But on the other hand, you won't have followed up because there isn't any enough evidence to follow it up. And then in a year's time, 18 months' time, some of them will start popping up again somewhere else. And then you start going, this looks a bit too suspicious, we'll have a closer look at these. Well, thank you very much. Stuart, I have one question, and that is, in the past we've had this is ignorance on timing on my part, I think. We get the number of days that you are doing, and there seems to be a large number of not starters that you're about to start, and some that you intend to start in quarter four. In terms of the days, are you halfway through the year in terms of your estimate of what each, because you had a column of how many days each job would get and whatever. Does the question make sense to you?
Yes, Chair. No, we're nowhere near, in one sense, halfway through the 225 days, which was the total time allocated for the budget. There's been two or three things, really, with some delays to pieces of work. We had planned to have started, say, the payroll audit by now. Members will recall one or two issues in the past, and also it's transferred from York to North Yorkshire County Council. But we're hanging off until some of the transfer challenges, principally around reconciliations, have been fully sorted. So we had another piece of work on performance, which was Claire with the lead. So we'll, myself and one of my colleagues is meeting with Chief Exec and with Anton next month to go through each of the audits, where they're at, but also to reprioritise in terms of timescales. And there may be potentially one or two audits that maybe they're not as important now, and more emerging audits tend to be a mid-year refresh. So we are, I've got the days to hand, but we'll be between a quarter and a third, I think, of the audit days through, because predominantly we there's been one or two delays, but also we save the financial audits to the second half of the year because we need sufficient transactions. You know, as part of the creditors audit, we do duplicate testing twice a year, so we have to wait till October, and so on. So we are not, probably answered for a minute and a half, a simple question is no, we're not.
So, I'm sorry, I've got one of those nasty little noses that pokes into things. If we've got a quarter or a third of the way through in half of the year, are we going to get to where we get to by the end of the year by cutting down the workload, by doing something else, or is there some other factor that I don't understand? Because if you're going to be changing that lot now, when is this committee going to get to know about those changes, or is that going to be three quarters of the way through the year we're going to be told, oh, by the way, this is what we were doing? And the York one, I fully understand. I mean, I was here as a non-member of this committee, and as a member of the committee and whatever, watching that York mess get sorted out, and it would be stupid to try and spend time sorting out what should have happened there when you've got the new arrangements coming in to look at. That makes complete sense.
I suppose there's probably two questions to just split off to answer. The first one, in terms of delivery by the end of April, which is the period by which we seek to have all audit reports issued, at least in draft. We are in no, say, worse position than we were this time last year. I've been the audit manager here since 2014, and it tends to be the last 6 months are far busier than the first 6 months. So from my point of view, we've got the resources from the team lined up to do the audits. I suppose also, with it being the 25th of October, I know we're further progressed than that report shows at the end of September. So in terms of delivery of work, I have no concerns, because it's kind of how audit tends to work in some sense, and the fact that people are either unavailable or systems change is just part of the course.
Okay.
On the second point, to do with when members would be informed, I think it probably goes back in some sense to the audit charter. As soon as anything is discussed and agreed with officers, and any changes that are made, then to the next audit committee we would present the information to explain to members why and where we've made the changes, and you will be able to have that information and see what changes have been made. I think the audit plan was written at a point in time in March, and Rydale and other risks will be different in some instances at this point in time. So it's always sensible to have a mid-year refresh. In some sense, you're constantly updating as part of planning work, whether the emphasis or the original scope of the work that was agreed a few months ago remains to be relevant. And that's why we have good conversations with officers when we scope each audit. So any changes that would be agreed in the next quarter would be presented as part of the progress report to the January committee.
My tiny concern with the logic of that is that at the beginning of the year, I think we approve the audit plan. So we say, yep, yeah, or could say, no, we don't like that bit. And we've had odd comments before. When you get into January, to start having a changed audit plan, you've only got 2 months left before you're going, thank you very much, good night. It's not very much of an us approving the audit plan at that point. It is, as you use the words, we would be told what was happening. Now, if we've been told what's happening, that's hardly approving what the plan's going to be. And I just wonder if the timing is quite right. Maybe I'm just feeling sensitive because you deleted overview and scrutiny earlier on completely. But you see the point I'm making, that we're supposed to be the committee that is doing at least some of the steering. And at that point in January, we're going to get a rear-view mirror of what almost happened. Is there any logic in that, or have I missed something?
I can see where you're coming from, Chair. I think from the audit point of view, as the Charter, I suppose, sets out the arrangements in one sense, but we are discussing those, or with our professional head on, discussing it with Anton and the Chief Exec. And if members want to be informed any earlier, we can do so.
I'm just wondering, on that basis, should we be? And I haven't got Anton here to either tell me to shut up or keep going, depending on how he views it as an officer. Just a thought. I'm not wanting to make any decisions on it tonight at all, or any changes. I'm just saying it's something that looks as though we are steering at the beginning of the year, and then by the time we get to January, we're looking to see where we've been, which is probably means that if you're going to make a change, the scrutiny committee ought to be informed. When did you say your meeting was to look at the changes?
Monday the 12th of November, we, Anton, myself and Stacey, you're going to...
That might suit very well, because we have, because we've stopped the audit meetings and scrutiny meetings and put them together for this very reason. That could mean that we have a brief report from you saying what changes you have made or are planning to make or whatever. And if we don't like it, fortnight before or a week before when we get those changes, we can Stuart, here, quick, please, etc. Or, I don't know why I was bothering to ask, that seems incredibly logical and you don't even need to come to the meeting at that point.
Yeah, I mean, just an example, just to maybe make it a little bit more real for members, there's an audit in the plan on treasury management. Clearly, I want to have a chat with Anton as a result of the changes from when we agreed that audit in March. It was put in the plan because there was new SIPFA code and new arrangements that the SIPFA code was expecting in certain aspects of treasury management. But obviously, with treasury management and the emphasis moving with North Yorkshire more involved, I need to have a conversation with Anton to see whether there'd be value, as well as scrutiny, in us continuing to do that piece of work, whether he would think it would be, in his Section 151 areas of responsibility, good assurance for him in something that has changed and is quite important to the Council. So the conversations around that kind of move as a result of things happening. So there doesn't tend to be too many. I think history shows here and other clients, it tends to be one or two audits where you continue to challenge whether there's value either in the challenge or the scrutiny or the support you're trying to achieve with what you agreed 9 months previous in the plan. So I wouldn't expect from a member's point of view significant numerous changes. I've got one or two areas where I just want to use my knowledge with Anton to see what the combined view is and whether the scope needs to be either changed to a different area that's more important for the Council, or just refined in a little way to not duplicate some of the things that the Council are now doing with that arrangement, for example, with North Yorkshire.
I think that's most helpful. I am not expecting any large changes coming from you, but I think in terms of, say, the risk management one, that is moving and changing quickly, and you may decide that in audit terms, that may have moved or may not. And it makes sense for us to know earlier rather than later. And if you like the York one, and I don't know who, I hope I'm not treading on anybody's corns here, but the York one was kicking around for something like 3 years plus. With, you know, not a, no contract, not signed off, whatever else. And it's like things, but they go on going wrong in the same little bit. And it's just us trying to keep on top of. But no, that's absolutely fine. And I just wonder whether in future, in next year, whether the days ought to be in there so that people can look at it in relation to how far you've gotten, what you've done, rather than bringing it up later. Did I see a hand over here? Is Will?
Yeah, just following up, Joy. I fully understand it's a plan, and plans about changes, things. No problem at all. Just looking at things that you need to start in quarter four, there's definitely things that they're planning to start. That doesn't mean they need to finish in quarter four, or
it does.
They're with the original plan.
I think it means finish.
In terms of the kind of our performance, what we're appraised with as part of our contract is we need to get all the final reports done by the end of April. There's a little bit more leeway than choosing the end of March because it's a really busy period for officers. Not that April is that much quieter for some officers, but also annual leave and other reasons means it's a challenging deadline for people. So in terms of those quarter four audits, part of the conversation next month is to try and get individual months for when we can start those pieces of work so that we can meet the deadlines to finish by the end of April.
In which case, if I may, Chair, if that's the case, I think it is vitally important that this committee gets an early flag on that, just following up on what John said, because there are one or two there that are very dear to work that this committee is engaged in from other directions. So it would be very useful to get a heads up on that as soon as you've got it. That's not to say, just so we know where we are with them.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, John.
Can I underline that that's not a criticism, it's us wanting to be involved and knowing rather than finding out what has. It's absolutely not a jot of criticism in that whatsoever. And there's no more questions from anybody. Can I thank the pair of you immensely? That's been very enlightening, thorough, and most useful. And we'll try not to call you back in here in November if we do end up with that other bit of reporting doing. But you may have got more than welcome to come in November because the popularity of joining this committee seems to be going up massively. Thank you both very much indeed. And the same things about if you'd like to stay, you're more than welcome, but I think you've got to stay if you're not, Stuart, in relation to the risk management one, because Anton isn't here. And the same thing goes to everybody else. If you'd like to leave, you may, and if you're thoroughly enjoying it, please stay. Sorry? I'm worried about this. It's normally a massive exit to the...
You need to approve it.
Yeah. Can we? I move that we accept the report and move the recommendations.
Do you need a second, John?
Sorry, I do. You're absolutely right, Dana. Thank you. Were you seconding it? Yep. I've done that in one. Should that have been done in two? Anton, come back quick. We're happy with you. All right. Thank you. Well, I can do, Linda, if you very, very keep. Yeah.
That's carried.
I won't ask you what the vote was. I wouldn't be that picky, Will. Right. The next two items, my favourite items, Treasury Management Annual Report and Treasury Management Mid-Year Review, are both not here and have been deferred to the November meeting because Anton's not here, in simple terms. Item 13, timetables of meetings, page 95. My memory serves me right, got a lot of nothing on this page. This page is left deliberately blank. Anybody got any comments, anything that's concerned? The external auditors were happy with the date that they've got in July, I believe it is, for overview and scrutiny. The 24th, yes? Yeah. Does any other date cause internal audit any problems? Can anybody know of anything in the council agenda that parish councils, town councils, Rydale Fairs, whatever else that may get in the way? No, they do. Sometimes we can't. Meetings get moved. On that basis, can I move the recommendation that council is recommended to approve the timetable of meetings for 19-20 attached at Annex A to this report? Those in favour? I've just read that out. Recommended to get. Sorry? I said that council is recommended. We are recommending that to council. Yes. We recommend that council is recommended to approve the timetable of meetings. Is that. I think that's what I said. Did I not? There's two recommendeds in it. Yeah. We recommend that the council is recommended to approve the times. You can have whichever. Or we can move that council is recommended to approve. Yeah, that'll do. The council is recommended to approve the timetable of meetings, etc. Can we vote on that, please? Have we got a seconder?
I'll second.
Thanks. Thank you, Will.
That's carried. That's unanimous.
Right, what have we got next? Corporate mismanagement. I've got a copy of it, yeah. I'll grab it back. Thanks. Stuart.
Thank you, Chair. Becky May want to help me out in terms of you were at the meeting where risk management was discussed by one of the Verito team, where I suppose from a member's perspective, just to set the scene a little bit, for the last 2 years in the annual governance statement we've highlighted significant weaknesses in internal control based on risk, and I suppose what this report does a little earlier than perhaps Pete would naturally have done is give you an update on that progress against the weaknesses that were highlighted in the annual governance statement at the last meeting in July. Probably just set the scene a little bit as well to say that internal audit have been involved in this, but it's a separate member of the audit team who has nothing to do with the audit themselves, who is risk management qualified in the Institute of Risk Management studies that he's done, and we are allowed under public sector internal audit standards to do consultancy work. This is probably not what we do that much of, but what we discussed in scoping the work is it was felt very helpful for officers to have somebody who is a risk management specialist to kind of hold the hand through the process of improvement that the council needed to put in place. So what the report hopefully does is provide some context to what's happened since the last committee, and gives a timetable which was discussed and I think agreed with Anton, Becky and other senior management last week, to give some comfort that the serious internal control weaknesses that were highlighted in the previous audit reports are being supported by improvement actions by officers. Page 5 and 6 highlights the 20 individual tasks that I think were part of the conversations, Becky, last week, and which, with subsequently Anton pulling the report together, is, you know, was discussed in detail with officers and, you know, refined, challenged where appropriate, and gives hopefully the council a good framework for the next 2 to 3 months to put in place what was needed to put the kind of nuts and bolts of effective risk management strategy, policy, process in place. We had just finally, we had in between the 2 years seen aspects of improvement in terms of risk being part of management team a lot more and part of service management. It was just still not really codified, structured, documented in a way that you would expect risk management to be codified and documented. So I think that's all from my point of view, Becky. Is there anything I've missed from your side as somebody who's been involved in it as well from the management side?
No, I don't think I've got anything further to add, just to say that the work that we've been doing with this, apart from Connor, is giving us a framework which will be much more robust in terms of our way forward and the framework using our Pentana performance management system as well, so that risks are highlighted on there in more detail rather than the high level which we've had in the past.
Thank you both. You two, very good. Anton is just one person, and you can throw your voices around the room with immense skills. Any questions for either of the presenters? No? Well, I've got a couple, and please come back if there's any more. Anton's, and this is unfair, but I shall do it anyway, in relation to his report, talks about, and we have, as Stuart said, for 2 years been looking at risk management and how it was handled, and I have a feeling that things are being pulled together, particularly from this report and from things outside of the meeting. But we are being asked on the 24th of January, the overview and scrutiny we presented, revised risk management strategy and sign off remaining actions from audit action plan. And then 4 months later than that, we're going to be trained in risk management. And I think there's a slight risk there, but risk management program will tell us what the risk is, that we will be signing something off and then being trained several months later on different councillors, etc. And I really do think, and this is again a conversation, Becky, between you and Stacey and Stuart and whatever, I really do feel there should be some training between now and January so that we've got a better view of being able to look at what is happening and say, hang on a minute, is this bit right? Is that bit right? How should we not do? Rather than find ourselves with all that lot all nicely running for 6 months and then the new council go, why have you done this? Why have you done that? When they've had their training. I just have that thought to go with. And again, there may be a case for updating us in November, there may not be, and that's up to those of you who are doing it, rather than we've got it here, 22nd of November, update on risk management is fine, but again, we'll need to know more about it than I think we do tonight, because I think this is one of the problems in the past is members' responsibility. If we haven't realised that risk management has got questions around it, because most members, I won't take anybody else with me on this one, I don't understand risk management well enough to be able to question it, steer it, whatever else. And therefore, if it hasn't been right, I wouldn't have known. Stuart, that's the first thing. The second one is, has anybody looked back at this council's risk assessments over the last 5 years, 3 years, whatever, but a reasonable amount of time, where they've said it's an A5 or a D3 or whatever else, and then looked at it over that chunky length of time and gone, well, that was accurate, or, oh dear me, it wasn't. Because otherwise we might be turning risk management into a religion, and it all looks very nice and whatever else, but nobody's ever actually looked to see if it is working. Is that a stupid question, Stuart, or not? I'd rather you didn't say, yes, it is a stupid question, but, you know, whatever.
I would say probably not. I think...
Don't be tactful, it's not in character.
Well, from our point of view, one of the things when we've been... whenever we apply our risk management thinking, it has to be proportionate, and it also has to work for officers without... You know, underlying all of this, this paperwork, this process, but it's management of risk.
Mm.
And I know from an initial chat that I had when Connor was pulling together something for the management team, officers, I think Simon Copley was one, who was adding that type of challenge to say, how would I practically use this or apply this in actual, applying the risk management philosophies 6, 9, 12 months down the line. So... I wouldn't think it's getting close to being a religion. I think the challenge is to just make it meaningful and proportional. And
I'm sorry for interrupting, but I'm actually saying risk management has been running here for a long time. We used to even have a risk a member risk champion until nobody wanted the job, so the post was abolished instantly. If you should be able to look back at a decision, and I'm not going to embarrass any officer with any particular decision, but this council has had one or two quite big decisions, contracts decisions to or not to do. They will have had risk assessments with them. 5, 10 years later, need to be looking back and saying, were those risk assessments accurate? It's absolutely no point in having a risk assessment now that's perfect unless you know whether perfect means perfect, and I can't see how you do that without measuring as it was. Look at some things that have gone right or some things that have gone wrong, and look at the risk assessment back then and what's happening now.
I suppose with this work, we've kind of looked back at the last 2 years where risk hasn't been effectively managed in terms of what has been highlighted as risk in terms of the paperwork or the assessment of risk in terms of those scores or those management conversations.
Yeah.
I suppose I couldn't really comment going back much further than when we've done those two detailed pieces of work.
So sometimes you've done what I'm saying over a period of time.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you may not have the world's greatest risk management approach, but you still risk manage projects well because of individuals or just the right place, right time. So I'm probably not giving that good an answer. Is I don't know how far you can look back. I think the key thing is probably to focus on the forward looking with risk and improve the challenge, the reporting. It's easy to write a risk on a risk register, but is it moving?
Yeah.
Are the risk reduction actions making a difference to move it? There's certain risks you'll never be able to change because they're so difficult, you know, and some of the county council risks you see around social care, it's incredibly difficult, and it's a result on something like the 3-hour A&E time in the NHS to just keep it as it is because that's the best you can do with what you've got at your disposal. So I think the key thing going forward is the effectiveness of the risk reduction actions to improve or maintain or at least deliver where the council wants to be on particular areas of business. And what hopefully the strategy and the processes will allow is maybe a little bit like the budgeting, more summarised quality information to come to members, which will provide more rigorous ability to challenge but also better assurance that your partnership's risk is actually, well, what are your key partnerships, what's changed, what are the key things you need to manage on those, with the LEP, with community safety, or whatever it is, Whereas sometimes in the past, I remember, which is why we started doing some of the audits, is you'd get page summaries on very general performance, procurement, partnerships, but would you be able to get beneath the surface of the management of those risks? And I think hopefully what you'll find if you were to deep dive once the arrangements are in place is officers having that supporting information on the council system Pentana, which was covalent if memory serves, so it's something the council's had for a few years, and it will just be just clearer and cleaner to be able to see what's been managed in the risk sphere really. So I suppose I've, again, not probably fully answered the question, but hopefully give members a context to where in the next year you will hopefully, like on certain other areas, get better information, be able to provide better challenge, because the risk registers will be better and subject to more management oversight and review.
I mean, I'm claimed and still claim to be ignorant on risk, and on that basis, you know, I know not. But you mentioned budget, and we underspent on our budget 2 years ago. We underspent massively on our budget last year, and we are on track to underspend on our budget this year. What was the risk assessments in relation to under over spending on our budgets each of those years back? Because it wasn't right, or if it was right, it was highlighting something we then took no notice of. Then would tell you whether or not the system you had for risk management 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and 1 year ago were right, or, as I suspect, something in there were wrong. That's what I'm asking.
I think you're right, Chair. I think just to, in budgeting in context, it was conversations around towards the end of last year we had with external audit, where we were having our regular liaison, which we'd not done budgets the previous couple of years, and it became high on our radar that we needed to include budgeting as part of the audit plan.
Yeah.
We discussed those with most senior management. I remember having a detailed conversation with Claire, and obviously there was part of the risk emerging with Peter not being around, who knows a lot of the financial reporting tools. But it was more wider than that, and that's why on that particular risk it was the first audit that we started, because it was clear from some of the conversations that there was an awareness of aspects of the risks, but it wasn't entirely crystallised, I suppose, at that point with the year-end position. Yeah. So I suppose that, again, the paperwork would be interesting, but officers, there was things that we were picking up either from external audit or from officers that were highlighting there was questions around aspects of budgeting back then. So, yeah, the paper, I don't know what the risk would have been saying specifically to do with that back then.
If there wasn't a risk assessment done, there should have been. And if there, well, that in itself is a lesson. And if there was risk assessment done at that point, was it accurate? But it might have said the risk of underspending is very high,
and I think
I doubt it, but it could have done.
I think with budgeting as well, the emphasis up until, well, I remember is we haven't got enough money, so therefore our risk is our ability to deliver services. Or more recently with Northamptonshire, the risk changes to that being more crystallised with some of the issues that have come out of that. So I would know without looking back, but I'd imagine aspects of budgeting or financial management would have been more focused on those quite perceived significant risks, as opposed to the underspending, which has ultimately transpired over the last year or two.
Lovely. Will?
Just picking up on your earlier comments, if I can, Chair. In recent times, I think there's been no more fervent advocate of the fact that members of this council, not this committee, this council in general, need to take responsibility and accountability in a way that maybe has not been the case necessarily in recent times, but that's just my opinion. However, whilst I hear your point about the need for training before the next meeting, I actually think there's a cart and horse here, that in actual fact, it's only when we have the risk management strategy that training for anybody in it would make any sense. So I actually have a view that says the time frame for this in terms of rollout of strategy
and development of risk awareness training is right, and that if we put something in before that, we would simply be probably putting something in that would be, forgive the words, fairly rushed, fairly short term, and probably not add a lot of value. And I actually do think we are far better waiting for the risk management strategy to be developed, because there is something for then training to be based on, both for staff and for members. But that's just my opinion.
Well, two things. One, we have a risk management strategy, which I'll ask Becky to come in a second on. And the second thing is, I'm not suggesting that the new councillors don't get trained in how to handle this beast when it arrives. I am concerned on us approving that beast for it to say, yeah, that's fine, if we haven't had our training. Yes, we need training to be able to do it and look at it and be educated on it, but if we're going to be approving it, we may need it as well beforehand. Becky.
Just to really signpost members to the Council's risk management strategy, which was revised in July 17, and the work that we're describing this evening sort of follows on from that in terms of how we develop our corporate risk register and service risk registers and use the performance management arrangements to help to ensure that things flow from this and how risk management's embedded in the organisation. So we are working from the already approved strategy.
Any more for any more? No? No. In which case, can I move, I'll try and get this one right, Will, that the report be noted. Have I got a seconder? Thanks, Ed.
It's unanimous, Chair.
Thank you all. Can I suggest that we have a 5 to 10 minute no more comfort break before we move on to the next section of the meeting? If nobody wants to, we can make it less than that if nobody goes and comes back. We're going to move on. Doing the first one.
Well, I mean, they're just on the agenda first. For, I'm happy to.
Sorry?
I'm happy to.
You're happy to introduce that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know, it must be something I've said, you know. That one. Thank you both. Well, yes. That's one of the things we have to do, is fix up dates. Thank you both very much indeed. Thank you, Stuart.
Thanks.
Stuart's all right at the end there.
Huh?
Stuart's all right at the end there.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you want to join us, Tim? Right, well, that was the a quick and appropriate 5 minute comfort break. Item 15, Resolution at council meeting on the 11th of October, delivering the council plan, reports triggered by performance indicators. Becky?
Really, just to say what's on the face of the agenda, really, that the committee's obviously looking at this resolution and how it fits in with the work that's been ongoing with our review of the performance indicators. One of the actions that I'm following up since this was resolved by the council is to actually work with the performance projects and programme team. Sorry, maybe I got the name a bit muddled up, but working with Will and Joe and Jane and the performance team, just looking at how our corporate performance management system can help us with generating reports to help to ensure that whatever we put in place is system generated rather than creating more work. And we will be providing an update as we go along in terms of how that's going to look once we're clearer about the new reporting arrangements around performance.
So this is more a piece of work for officers than members?
Yes. I guess once we get to a point where we are flagging up the particular performance indicator where there is a red or amber, then that will go to the appropriate committee for them members to decide if and what other action is required around that particular area, depending what it is. But in terms of setting up the process to actually generate the report for members to see it in a different format, it's just making sure we're not creating work behind the scenes for officers to that's cumbersome. It's about using the system that we've got and developing it to make sure we've got a seamless process in place. Yes, I'm planning to do like an action plan to sort of give members a feel of how we're going to progress with this piece of work so you can see what to expect and when.
If I can, Becky, just to follow up on that so I'm absolutely clear, my understanding is that this is a piece of work for officers that will lead to these are the changes that we want to make, and then that will come to this committee for this committee to say, yes, we think that's the right direction, if that's what they think, and that will then be recommended by this committee to full council. Is that the process?
I think the recommendations will come from this committee.
Yes.
Back to P&R.
Sorry. Yeah. Through P&R back to full council.
Yes.
Fine, thank you.
Anybody else? Anybody any questions? I think there is one area, and the reason this motion was put forward in the first place is that we had targets that were information unavailable for two or three quarters running. We had red for affordable housing for a couple of years running. And it went to scrutiny and P&R, and nothing happened. And this is saying, if we have those circumstances, sorry, Janet? If under those circumstances, then something should happen. So if you've got two reds in a row, or two information unavailables in a row, then that would mean that the scrutiny committee would ask for a report, if it was housing, a report from planning, or a report from policy, or a report from both, as to how it had been managed to produce two reds in a row. That was the reasoning for it, rather than the circumstances we have had where it's been acknowledged or ignored, but not treated as a, oh dear me, we've got a target here that we're not making. And we have some of those in, as Becky alluded to, some others have been there for quite a long time. Not necessarily the council's fault, but not information unavailable. for a long time. For example, we have a policy for reducing the number of people in fuel poverty. And that comes up as off the scale time and time again. We haven't actually done anything about it. Now, we may not be able to, but it needs to come to a committee to say, this is our policy, what can we do about it? So, we will continue to work on it, but we do need to get some mechanics into it as to how the committees deal when they've got what it says here in the motion. Anything further on that one? Will's right, it's officer driven, but it needs to be members need to ensure that it happens, because it hasn't been happening for a fair length of time.
I just wanted to check. I mean, I absolutely agree with what Linda was saying. It's just that, having been at some of the subcommittee meetings that these have been discussed at, I just wanted to be absolutely clear in my own mind that we're still where we were in terms of the process, which we are.
We're still where we were. In other words, officers are working on the reporting things, but this is adding to that by saying if you've got a certain groups of reporting, they need to have motions of actions taken by committees. Everybody clear? Right. Item 16.
Do we need to note that as a
form? Well, we could, if you like. I don't think there's anything to do with it. It's what the council has said. Council's got it, but I'm quite happy. If you'd like to move noting it, well, I'm more than happy to second it.
It does say to invite you to note the following resolution, so I think we ought to formally note it.
I don't like... My concern is noting is that they don't actually do anything. Can I propose move an amendment to that, Will, that I hope you'll take, that we note it and look forward to a report in the near future? That,
I'm fine with that, John. Yeah.
I take your point.
I know the fall out with you about it.
They just disappear.
I think we have to formally... There has to be something formally that says it was noted.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. Have you got that, Will? Right. Those in favour?
That's unanimous.
Item 16... We're all there, so it went through full council, so I think that's fairly clear. But we need to set up a working party to look into and report back to full council. We need to look at climate change in relation to Rydale, and if time permits, looking into the impact on the whole of Rydale. And as we have to report back to the next meeting of full council, and that's early... Yes, yeah. But we need to get a... If we set up a subcommittee, the subcommittee can't do anything to full council, so it's got to be done by the next meeting, which is a month away. And that, I think, is all we need to do. That we'll note that if Will would feel happier with it. Would you like to move noting, Will?
Before we go on to noting that, I just say that I think this is a massive subject, and I think understanding what this council can do in order to contribute to that reduction in global warming could take over the whole council. If you were to do it in detail yourself, I think you could grind this council to a halt with this subject. And I think doing it to an appropriate level is going to be really important. I think we have to understand what areas of work that we do that can contribute to improving global warming. And I don't want it to take over your life, Becky, which it has the capability of doing that. You've still got to do the day job. It's all right, full council handing out massive issues like this. But, you know, you have a full-time job to do, and this could potentially be it. So I think we have to be very pragmatic about the work that we do and understanding how we can contribute.
Don't actually think, Linda, there is anything in here that says anything about not being pragmatic.
No, it doesn't.
There's nothing about it overtaking the whole of council.
No, I didn't say it would, John. I didn't interrupt you, Linda.
It doesn't say anything in that direction. Mm-hmm. When we've looked at it in a scoping review, we can then start making estimates or whatever as to how much resource will be needed or not needed. This committee's not going to decide, hasn't got the powers to decide anything, but it has the power to recommend to full council, and I'd rather wait until a working parties group has worked on it, looked at what the potentials are, and we can give that option and information to full council. At the moment, to start thinking that it might be too much or not enough, I have no idea. I have no idea what work there is to be done. I have no idea where we are in relation to climate change or not. And we need to sort of set up, we need to set up some kind of a group that is looking into what we need to look into, basically. We can't do it all in one step. We'd like to move noting.
I'd like to make an observation if I could.
Yeah, please do.
Chair, sorry. I think you're both right. In the way I would say this, very simply, is a question of, in terms of scoping, what are the things that this council is responsible for that affect this issue? Right. And they can be clearly identified.
Yeah.
And then I think we need to widen the net. So my view would be that once we've established that, maybe the way forward on this is to get an event together that brings all sorts of different people in with different views, and let's gather, yeah, so that we're actually, and that's a very much a staged process. So that scoping may simply be, these are areas that Rydale Council has statutory responsibility for that affect it, and therefore these are the ones we're looking at, and we're getting lots of views on these issues, not on other issues, on these issues, because these are the ones for which we have responsibility, and that's just how I would see it moving forward. But, you know, I'll throw it in as a hat into the ring, and no doubt let's see where this will take us.
I think that's a sensible approach, but you've got to bear in mind the report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and it is pointing out some pretty unpleasant possibilities, and we are responsible for the people of Rydale. So I'm not sure where that line that you're saying would end up or ought to be, and that's something we may want to look at.
And John, if I may, I'm not trying to prejudge that. I'm just suggesting as a broad approach that would seem to be quite, from my point of view, sensible.
I have no problem with that. I have equally no problem in that we have to keep the thing in proportion, but I don't know what proportion is at this point, because the reason for the change of the IPCC was pressure from people whose islands, whole communities, whole populations are going to disappear under the sea. Now, they may view it for some strange reason slightly different from the way we view it halfway up a hillside, as it were. Now, on that standpoint, if an international scientific body is saying this has got worse, this council has a very good track record in the past on these issues, and it's the government and the IPCC are asking us to put more in, not less. We ought to be building on the past rather than not looking at. But I don't know where that line will be and or whatever. I have no idea, and we're back to the previous issue, I have no idea what the electricity, gas, CO2 numbers are for this building or the swimming pools or anywhere else. And that's the sort of thing we've got to look at. I don't think we've taken a vote on your noting, Will.
Can I propose that, we're having considered, we note?
Yes, most kind. I'll second that. I've just thought, can I move an amendment, Will? Okay, you voted, that's fine. I'll vote for it. No, don't worry. That's quite fine.
That's carried.
It's instruction from council. We can't say no to it. Oh, that'd be interesting. I don't want to go down that one, Linda. Thanks. Yes, something like that, or bulls and china shops and all sorts of possibilities, yes. Or maybe all three. Right, we need task groups, and we need a task group for the, shall I call it the IPCC, or shall I call it the climate change one for the long-term usage of us? I think climate change, but if anybody has any strong feelings either way, it just in terms of, it doesn't, it's just easier for us to, when we're saying, yeah. So we need to arrange a date for the next task group on climate change. What else have we got, Becky? We've got the governance. That, I think, is that. Right, what people's diaries looking like. I think the climate change one we ought to throw as open as possible. In other words, any member of full council, and I'm quite happy to invite to a working party on that, any member for outside, and I'd like to pick up and somebody to make a note of Joss's comments that it may well, hello Joss, it might be worth having an evening in here where we're looking at the what Rydell could do, shouldn't do, whatever else. Now, we may not be able to get that done by November date, but we could ask members of the public what they think Rydell Council should be doing in relation to climate change or not doing in relation to climate change. Do you want to add anything to that, Joss? No, tell me what's that about. I don't know how that works.
And so we just thought that might be a way of inviting the public to participate in the discussion and to help members to think quite widely about.
Thank you, John. That's a possibility I think we ought to consider at the task group. Climate change one. Dates, thoughts, who would like to be on it? Do Do I have the support of my vice chair for this? When would you like it? That takes that excuse for not turning up out of it.
You'll have it next week, or you can have it the last week in November.
Well, I think the last week in November may be a little late in relation to our meeting in November, so we need to be next week.
Can we avoid next week, please, because there's not much support from officers?
Well, you better have it. The only other night you can have it then is on bonfire night. You can have it without me.
Yes, I know. You see what you're doing now, Becky. This is causing a large wedge to be driven between the chair and the vice chair. What day or date is November the 4th then? Or November the 5th, which were you saying, Jeff?
The 5th
is a Monday.
It's
Grant's working party. And that kicks off at 5, doesn't it? And it's going to be dark by 5 o'clock on those evenings. Members briefing on the 7th. Is there anything in
there? The member briefing on the 7th. There's resources working party on the 8th.
Yeah. So what about that's Mrs. Jeff though, doesn't it? 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock on the 7th. What about 5 o'clock on the 5th?
Isn't that Grant's working party?
Grant's working party, 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock on the 5th. I think there was some piece of logic there. That's somebody with inside information which is useful to know. Okay, let's go for the 7th.
I have to say the 7th isn't a great night, but given it's the member briefing that night, which I'm doing.
Not a great night for you, basically. No. Right.
Could do the 6th.
Is there any chance of you not doing it, somebody else doing it next week?
Well, yeah. Pardon?
It's half term next week, isn't it?
It's just I am concerned with this one because it's got to be done by November the 20-something, because we've got to report to full council, and we really need 2 between now and then if we're going to do it. I think we go for next week, Jeff. I think we're back to that somehow. I don't know.
Well, you don't have to have me.
But all the dates and times all go funny the week after.
Well, I could do Monday or Tuesday next week.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
What date's Monday? 29th. Monday the 29th. I will try and do some work before that to try and keep the meeting short as possible, and we'll discuss on the phone where we are. Try and get it as short as possible for you. Monday the 29th, what time? Who else is going to be there? Will?
Not next week, John.
Do you want to be there in the longer term, though?
Not as a formal member of the working party. No, I'm happy to step in and step out.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. By this is where we've worked. Where we always work. Which is why I looked to Jeff. Yeah, this is why I looked to Jeff to try and get the first one with Jeff there, and then have a float from there on. Monday the 29th. So there's Janet. Linda. John?
The
Yeah. So can you make the 29th? Yes, I realise that. But Becky can only make Monday and Tuesday.
Monday and Tuesday.
And that's somewhat reluctantly, which I accept. Sorry? Can you make the 29th? Tim? Yes. Yeah, I'm going to do that now. Yes, exactly. You
short
take the
notice,
word.
That's the only thing, isn't it?
It's short notice, but we have got in the room here four of us to get it kicked off. Because if we don't get it kicked off, we'll need at least two meetings. We might need a Scrabble one, you know, 3 days before the committee meeting. But if, on the other hand, we've got to get 30 years' position done, I think it was 30, come down to 12, it is a hurry. Yes, sure, Janet.
Do you think the other members of this committee ought to be asked?
Of course,
they're not
yeah.
here, others, that we should have been an email or...
Yeah, that's what John just said.
Poll that you send round.
John just said that. John, in fact, not just members of the committee, all members of council. Because this is a subject where, you know, we want every bit of expertise.
What time are we going for on Monday?
5 o'clock?
Five o'clock.
5 o'clock, Jeff? Is that too late, too early?
Yeah,
and I don't think we need to touch the governance at that one at all. Do you?
No.
I think the governance one can wait.
Mm.
The governance one will... And Jeff?
Yeah.
Do we fix that up? When are you away from, Till?
I'm away from the...
He's still on the tape. Eh?
We're still on the tape, yes.
Away from the the fifth.
We can fix up the governance working party beyond that, because that's been probably one meeting between now and the committee. Right. Interim verbal update from the Chair of Overview and Scrutiny.
You talked about other people out there in the community who could help, and it would be perhaps appropriate just to give a shot across the bows to say, look, we are doing this work. Could you think of your top 10 hits as to what we could do from using their experience so that, you know, we get them early in the scoping process, because they may come with something that we would not consider, or we may have an idea of doing something which would be totally beyond our capacity over the next 5 years type of thing. So I just wonder at what stage we should be looking for members of the public, experts in the public, that is, who've got special insight, and whether they could scramble together a few ideas that could help steer us in the scoping.
I think you're right, Tim, and I think you're partly wrong, to the extent that because the first meeting is so quick on that, that's what we ought to be, one of the things top of the agenda for Monday night. How do we involve the public? Then we bring in your point at that thing. How do we bring in the public who might be able to influence this massively or not? Can we, can't we, do we, don't? But I think that's a longer discussion than now. But it's very important. But we're losing two working days between now and then. But I think we decide that at that point. Anything more in relation to that?
Just an observation, Chair, if I may, going back to what my views earlier. I think the key thing for this is to actually, this is a scoping exercise, and I think that's the first thing that needs to be done. And maybe the first meeting can do that if it's got officer input, which is really a question of, you know, what are the areas you know, can be affected by what this council does. I'm not saying they're the only areas, but I really do think that's the start point. There is no point us going chasing off things that we want to write letters about that affects, you know, things thousands of miles away. We need to be thinking about what we actually can do here, I think, first. So I would hope that first meeting, it literally can be, you know, a flip through statutory responsibilities. What is it that we affect? And then you've almost got your scoping document then, which is, you know, we've had a look at what we can affect, and here's a list of the first 10 things we think we can affect. And that could be your interim report to council. It may well be it needs to go no further than that at this point. But the next step, now we've identified these however many areas, the next step now is to push those out to members of the public to get their input onto those specifics. Just a thought, but as a process, that seems very simple to me. But then, you know, I'm a process-driven person, so...
I will mull. Answered a point now in my mind as to how exactly we should be doing. I'm wary and aware of the size of it, and equally I'm wary and aware if we don't grapple it because it is big. And that's the balance, and hopefully by Monday night people have given that some thought as to how we handle. But there are all sorts of strands to it. What Rydale has to do, what Rydale could do, what Rydale could influence, what Rydale should be doing for the public, etc. Right. I'd now like to move to item 19. And there was an item that we had from earlier on.
Yes, consult with the committee on setting objectives for the
chief. Ah, yes. This
was.
Yes, I said I'm going to move to item 19 first. And then 18, yes. Any further business that the chairman decides is urgent. I've received today a report from HR in relation to the governance of the chief executive. And the governance of the chief executive is going to be done on the appraisal side by the three chairs of the three committees. And in the documentation I've got from HR today, it says it would be helpful if those chairs consulted with their committees. Now that's an interesting concept and absolutely fine by me, but the timescale is hard work at the best, because we should have probably been setting these targets and looking at appraisal at some point in September, because in terms of the 6 month period at the beginning, we're rattling into the, you know, finishing the second month of it, and to say this is what we think you should achieve in the first 6 months starts to look a little bit ridiculous when you've got 3 or 4 months down the track. So I leave it with you to come back to me If anybody wants to add in as to what we should be putting in and looking at the appraisal, and I will endeavour to talk to everybody else on the committee that isn't here at this point.
Can you share that document with the committee?
Yes, okay.
Send that round.
Yeah. I was going to say that at the end. There is a document from HR underlining that, which you'll get a copy sent to you by the usual systems. And then you'll see in there what I'm saying now, that I'd like feedback, if you want to put feedback in as to what we should or shouldn't do.
I'd be interested to see that document, see how it compares with what the appointments subcommittee recommended.
I think all this is interesting. And I also think that this is a different way of feeding in, but by definition, with 30 councillors feeding in through three chairs, it's going to be very difficult to give weight to whatever one of those inputs in. But I will do my best on your behalf, depending on what representations and comments I get. Yeah. Now, I think the easiest way of dealing with the next bit, which is a statement under item 18, is a statement from the chair, but so as to enable people to consider or add or comment or whatever else, I'm going to move exempt at this point, but it's not moving into a debate, it's moving exempt so that you can hear what I've got to say and comment if you want to on it, rather than me move it out of exempt and then ask you not to comment, which I think is rude at the best. No, I don't have either. I guess, Linda, that it is the minutes of the appointments subcommittee on the 27th of September.
We can send those round again.
Yeah. So I suspect, I've just assumed 99 to 100, the last page is an error, but I think it's only one page and I'm not even sure what it is. We will endeavour to find out for you. And two things, Linda, it would have helped if you'd spotted it earlier, and it would have helped if I'd spotted it earlier, but neither of us did. But I don't remember anything from any point as to some mysterious document that we haven't got. I don't think it is. No, exactly. We can't even note it, Will. So, can I move exempt? And can I ask somebody to second that? Thank you, Linda. Can I ask officers to depart? But we will be a few minutes only. Yes, sorry, Will. He's on the ball. Those in favour and those against going into exempt.
Can I just be clear about why we're asking officers to leave?
We're moving into exempt.
Exempt doesn't exclude officers,
I'm
usually.
Asking officers to leave, Linda.
Right. So as long as I'm clear that it's you that's asked.
Yes, I'm quite happy. Is that on the tape?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Thank you, Will. I would like that on the tape, but I have asked for that.
That's carried.
Tim?
Would you like me to leave the room as well?
No, yeah. I'm quite happy for you and John to stay.
Nothing's exempt.
I don't have a problem with that.